Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, former Seinfeld writer Andy Cowan shares a few tales from Hollywood, including a story about the time his material got ripped off.
Now, I know this bit. What is this bit? And I fast forward to the credits, and my ex-writing partner that I worked with for a very short time stole my bit verbatim. And it was the first incarnation of Mr. Subliminal. Kevin Nealon wound up doing it years later. And it was verbatim, my bit. It was a hell of a sign that, boy, I had courage to do anything.
Today on the show, comedy writer Andy Cowan talks about the ups and downs of living in Los Angeles and other tales from Hollywood. Stay close.
Hey, it's Andy Cowan, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you guys are a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. I have to say, if you're a new listener, you have a lot to catch up on, Andy Cowan, because I'm celebrating my 9th year anniversary in July.
I couldn't have made it for the 10th. I had to come here 1 year prematurely.
Well, let me just tell you something. Hopefully, next year at this time, we'll have you back, first of all.
Okay.
And second of all, if we're talking about 9 years, in podcasting years, that's like, I'm like 180. Do you know what I mean?
It's even more so than dog years. You're right.
But I have to say, I am happy about when I got into podcasting, because now there is such a proliferation of them. I kind of at least have my audience. Thank you very much, everybody out there. But really, you know what I mean? Like, I have a core net of people that I don't know if it was a brand new show I could capture.
Right, right. No, you deserve kudos for that. Incredible.
Oh, well, thanks. I wasn't asking for it, but I'll take that. I hope you guys enjoyed the show last week with dating and sex expert and cougar, Karen Lee Potter. And her story was titled Losing My Virginity Twice. Twice being the operative word, Andy. So what's that all about?
Apparently, it grows back. I don't know.
That's not it.
Oh.
That's not it.
Oh.
She was talking about losing her husband and then, you know, kind of rediscovering herself. But the crux of it is that her husband was murdered.
Oh.
Like full on in the workplace. Some guy comes in, knifes him to death in front of the office.
Oh.
So there's that. And then Karen Lee Potter kind of pulled herself up and her three children.
Mm-hmm.
And she's quite a success. So go back, you guys, and listen to her story. Not about her husband, although she does talk about that. Because I told her she buried a lead. I mean, that is interesting.
That is definitely burying the lead.
But so is losing her virginity twice.
Mm, mm, mm.
Yeah, well, see, now you got a smile on your face.
Wow, I have at least one virginity to go to catch up to her.
Well, everybody has a story, that's for sure. Anyway, you guys, go back and listen to Karen Lee, but not today, because today I'm here with writer and producer Andy Cowan, and he brings forth the topic, True Hollywood Tales. And so, first of all, this whole show, Storyworthy, has a lot of true Hollywood tales, but you are coming from a place of extreme knowledge, Andy, because you have been in Hollywood for a long time.
War Wounds.
War Wounds, which kind of leads into the book that you recently wrote called Banging My Head Against the Wall, A Comedy Writer's Guide to Seeing Stars. And so it does sound like, yeah, you have some stories to tell.
Yeah, one of my pet expressions from the book is they should keep the Hollywood sign, knock down Hollywood, and replace it with Hurry Up and Wait. Because that's what this town is all about.
In other words, are you talking about like the last man standing, or are you talking about stick-to-itiveness?
Definitely stick-to-itiveness, which you exemplify with your 9 years and counting.
Let me tell you something. A lot of times, a lot of months, weeks, I'm on my hands and knees trying and getting by. Do you know what I mean? Like, Nothing's easy.
That's part of why I wrote this book, because it was so cathartic to get the stories out there and to show people. Because sometimes you get the impression from reading Deadline Hollywood or whatever else that, oh, everybody's getting deals and everybody's thrilled to get a deal. It's funny when an executive is hired, we're thrilled to be in business with, you read that constantly and you're thinking, well, geez, everybody else is finding it easy. I guess it's my problem, but no, it's difficult for everybody to, yeah. Because the default expression is no in this town, and you just have to keep plodding on.
Now, there's something you wrote in this book that really struck me, and you say, the entertainment world is collaborative and unpredictable and usually outside of your control. It's important to get along with people, but sometimes it's more dangerous to keep diplomatically playing the game than it is to burn a bridge and build a new one to your sanity.
That's right. That's right. There's a whole chapter in my book called The Opposite of Holding Back. I, being known for the opposite, I helped George win with applying the opposite on Seinfeld, which came from my life. But
that's awesome.
Yeah. And so there's a whole chapter where I finally kind of let people know where they stand in relation to the, debilitating treatment they exhibit. And, sometimes you just have to tell them like it is. But, the book is also filled with examples of turning lemons into lemonade. And I hope it's somewhat inspirational as well as funny for the reader.
Yeah, but to go back on point, are you also saying, though, that you do have power, like you have the power to say no?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that is empowering.
Mm-hmm.
You can't always kiss ass. You can't take things that aren't up your alley, or you're going to find out later it doesn't work.
That's true. That's true. You really, if you don't work in a particular environment, it's just because you haven't found the environment that suits your purposes the best and will ultimately suit the audience the best. And it's also easy to let other people's treatment of you, if you're not careful, start shaping your own self-image.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, I don't know if that's a variation of the Stockholm syndrome or what.
Or your own artistic expression. Or you start doubting how you're doing things because
right.
you think, well, they must know.
Right. And,
right. Because they seem to be working all the time.
Right.
And now with social media, it's like, people only post the good stuff. Do you know what I mean? Nobody's going to be posting like, well, I fucked up again. Or,
right.
I just got rejected again.
Right.
You're not going to say that.
Right. Yeah. I try to be honest about the victories and the defeats in life and in the book.
And so in your, when you look back over your career here in Hollywood, do you regret things I'm not sure what kind of home you live in, but do you think God, if I had lived, even 50 miles out of LA, I could have so much more land, so much more space. Do you miss that stuff? I could, having all the major stuff.
Well, that was basically the genesis of my opposite idea, because I had always used to think I should have done the complete opposite of whatever I've done up till now. I would have been better off. And that's what I wound up pitching Larry David. But that goes hand in hand with my thinking, to some degree to this day. Boy, what if I had done this? What if I had done that? Boy, you really sacrifice a lot pursuing this beast, just as you say, in terms of, where you're living and what you have to deal with. And
but you love Los Angeles.
I love the notion of, I love being in the creative zone here in Los Angeles. I don't love the things that come your way that you have less control over, including even traffic.
Yeah.
If you can just kind of put blinders onto that and keep your eye on the creative prize that really sustains you, then I love Los Angeles.
Well, and lower expectations in terms of what you get for your money. And, I'm kind of talking to myself at the same mm-hmm, time, but mm-hmm. I always, when I go back east to visit my family, and I'm from Pittsburgh, you're from Philadelphia, mm-hmm. both those towns, the cost of living is dramatically different than where we are.
Right.
So sometimes I get that pang of jealousy, oh my gosh, look what these guys have.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in my case, my siblings are all older and they're already scaling down.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They've all had the huge flipping McMansions and now they're going down.
Mm-hmm.
I never got there.
I know, we're still looking for the going up phase to go down from.
But I'm not in other words, though, I am and I'm not. Like, I'm quite happy living in a smaller space, but everything being walkable. And mm-hmm. so I think you trade things off. It's mm-hmm. like living in Manhattan or something.
Oh, sure.
There's just exchanges.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of those people would, welcome your lifestyle.
Yeah, man. You guys want to play tennis 4 days a week? That's what I do.
That's great.
I know. It is great, isn't it? I play a lot of tennis, go to the gym. It's fun. I love it. Very healthy. And I got to tell you something. What I feel really good about now that I'm in pretty good shape are my bras. You heard me. Did you hear me?
I did.
Listen, I want to talk to you about my very favorite sponsor of all time, and that's Third Love Bras. Now, I know you probably have girlfriends in and out of your life, wives. I don't know what's going on, Andy Cowan, but I'll bet you whatever women are in your life, they also would love Third Love. You guys, this is the easiest sponsor to talk about because it is just fantastic. First thing about Third Love that I love so much is that they have more sizes than most other brands. And I'm talking about more than 70 sizes. Did you know there's more than
70?
70 sizes of bras, yes, including their signature half cup sizes. Plus, you can just go to Third Love's online fit finder, order and try them on at home. So there's no more like awkward fitting room experiences. Because I got to tell you something, there's nothing stranger than going into, you know, a bra store, and then they have to come in the booth with you or whatever.
I've had plenty of awkward fitting experiences. There's nothing worse than seeing four me's in mirrors looking bad.
That's what I'm saying. Well, listen, you go over to thirdlove.com. They've got this fit finder quiz. Over 12 million women have already taken this quiz, and it's actually a lot of fun. It only takes about 2 minutes to do, and Third Love will help you identify your breast size and shape and find the styles that fit your body. There's a 100% fit guarantee. And if you don't love it, listen to this, Andy. Are you listening? If you don't love this bra, okay, you can keep it around for 60 days. You can wear it. You can wash it. You can do whatever you want with it. And if you don't love it, you send it back. And Third Love, they'll wash it and donate it to a woman in need. I love that. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
They're giving back. And then I've talked about this before, and I'm going to say it again. The other thing that's great about these bras are not only is the variety, the styles, the colors, how soft they are, but they're tagless.
Hmm.
Are you picturing this?
I'm trying.
They put the information of the bra on the bra strap.
Mm-hmm.
So it's on the material. So there's none of those. I swear, when I'm in the store, and anywhere I am, if I see a woman's bra strap sticking out, like her... The tags, the bra tags, mm-hmm. I just want to tuck them in.
That would be a friendly gesture.
Well, I know, but it's also, you know, you can't just touch people, Andy.
Isn't it a shame? In this real world, that's true.
Right now, they're offering my listeners 15% off your very first order. Go over to thirdlove.com/story now and find your perfect fitting bra. You'll get 15% off your first purchase. You guys, that's thirdlove.com/story for 15% off today. Andy Cowan...
Reminds me of the Seinfeld bra story I pitched Larry that he loved.
Oh, yeah?
Never made it to air.
What was it? It wasn't the brassiere or the man's
No. They were planning a bra episode that season, which made it more difficult to get this on. But it was George in the laundromat stumbling upon a huge lost bra in the dryer. And he looked at it as his glass slipper. He wanted to find the woman it fit.
That's really funny.
Yeah, and then, of course, Kramer disabuses him of the notion that it's a sexy bra. It's obviously a grandmother's bra. Look at the lace on that.
Right.
It was a funny episode. Yeah.
I can't wait to talk to you more about this because you have written on Seinfeld. And I'm friends with other people from Seinfeld, like Peter Melman, and so many talented writers. I mean, like now looking back, and even at the time, do you feel like you were in the presence of some really... great comedic talent.
Oh, I was just in awe. I was so thrilled. I was a kid in the candy shop that didn't quite taste the candy by the end of the run. But it was just to see that iconic set and be there. And I just felt out of any show I was a part of that it matched my sensibility the most. Yeah. I just got such a rush from being there.
And what night did it shoot?
I think it shot, oh my God, it was either Tuesday or Friday.
On CBS Radford.
Yes, CBS Radford, absolutely.
And then you would be there as the writer. You would be there at what time?
Well, that was an unusual setup because there wasn't a table when I was there, which I love because I hate tables. I like writing off on my own. And they didn't have room for me in the actual building at the time. So I had my own dressing room, bathroom, office.
That's so funny.
Where I would show up just for catered lunch every day with the group. And they didn't even talk about the show. They talked about minutia as if it were a Seinfeld episode. So it was just such an unusual situation.
In other words, decisions were already made before you ever, you know, because you're handing in writing samples, or you're given a story and you go with it.
Well,
or?
You pitch stories to Larry and Jerry. But most often Larry. And, you know, when he signed off on four, you'd go off and write the script connecting the four stories to the main principles and hoping it went the next level.
They always seem to just be so tight. Mm-hmm. Like every show just ended up like so perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, as I say in the book, I provide lots of examples of Seinfeld episodes that didn't make it on air that are in the book that people have told me are very funny. And so, you know, to that degree, it was a frustrating experience, inevitably not getting more stuff on. But, you know, I was just thrilled to be there and get The Opposite on, which was a big episode. And that wound up a big theme in my life and the book.
That's so great. All right, you guys, we're going to get to Andy's story in just a second here. But before we do, I wanted to remind you to follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Storyworthy. I tell you that every week. So, like, at this point, you either are or you are not. And, you know, these are your choices. You know what I mean? I can't beg. I can beg. I'm known to beg, but I'm not going to beg. Head over to storyworthypodcast.com as well, you guys. Join my mailing list. I have a Patreon page. I never talk about Patreon, but I think I'm going to start talking about it. And you know what I think I might do, Andy?
What?
For the Patreon people who donate even just $10 a month, not a lot, but a small amount, I think I'm going to start a thing where I do like a 10-minute podcast each week, but it's very personal. So not talking about everybody else's stories, but my own, because I never do, which is not really true. But, I mean, I don't, you know, get as personal. So maybe I will. I don't know. I want to see about that. And also, you guys, check out the other show. I'm on screwedupstories.com with comedian Rachel O'Brien. And also head over to storysmashshow.com and check out the game show. We are having an absolute blast at the Hollywood Improv. If you are in Los Angeles, you just must come. That's all I'm saying. We're celebrating 2 years in July. Please come to Story Smash at the Improv. You would really like that show, Andy.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a laugh. It's really super funny. And so anyway, guys, check it out. And, you know, you hear it on the podcast as well. Every Story Smash is on the Storyworthy podcast. I air them, you know, every 4 weeks, whatever. You know that. All right, you guys, he's here right now, Andy Cowan. You've been listening to him. He is an award-winning writer, producer, and performer who, like I said, has written on Cheers, Seinfeld, Third Rock from the Sun, along with many, many other comedies and talk variety shows, including Merv Griffin.
That was my first gig.
Which is just stunning. I guess, you know, somebody wrote on it.
It was the 80s now. It wasn't the 70s. I'm not that old.
I think it's fascinating. I really do. You also have the memoir that we're talking about right now, Banging My Head Against the Wall, A Comedy Writer's Guide to Seeing Stars, which has done very, very well. And then you've written dozens of humor pieces for the LA Times and Salon, Reader's Digest. No, wait, Reader's Digest. Now, what are you writing in
got
there?
I got some cartoons in the Reader's Digest.
I see.
300 cartoons for Bizarro, cartoons for Reader's Digest.
I love Bizarro.
Oh! That was such a fun, just such a fun exercise, and people really loved the cartoons.
And so that's by Dan Pereiro.
Dan Pereiro, he stopped drawing the dailies January 2018. He just does the weekends, Sundays. He lives in Mexico now. And Ueno, great cartoonist from Pittsburgh.
No kidding.
I think he is from Pittsburgh. Took it over.
Wow.
We did some great cartoons. We even landed one on Meet the Press. That was such a thrill. Tim Russert's last Christmas of his life. He loved this cartoon. He showed it on the air.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah, I've always loved that cartoon. You've done so many different things, man. I mean, this is really, you're really very interesting. You guys can find Andy over there on Twitter at Andy G. Cowan. You ought to tweet more, man.
Yeah, I'm not a big tweeter.
But you would be so good at it.
Yeah. I do enjoy those short bursts. I mean, that was, in essence, what the cartoon was, with the Bizarro cartoon.
You should get on there, man. Yeah. You would have quite a presence.
Maybe I'll become president.
Well, hey, man, it could happen.
It worked for this guy.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Andy Cowan.
My earliest story that told me, wow, I am really hungry to make it in this business, was when I was a young pup back in Philly, and I read in the Philadelphia Inquirer that Lorne Michaels was looking for talent in front of and behind the camera. And I had been doing stand-up for a while, and green as I was, it was the not ready for primetime players era still, and I figured, hey, why not me? I'm not ready for primetime. So I got on a train, I took it up to New York, met with my buddy who worked at NBC, and we called Lorne Michaels' office and arranged a phony meeting under an alias. We picked my buddy's college friend's name, Sandy Troy, and they took the meeting for 6 p.m. that night. So I had to hang around NBC because my friend had to leave the building and I had no way of coming back in. And I hung out in stairwells and men's rooms. I remember running into Henry Kissinger. I don't know what the hell he was doing there. And I'm nervously anticipating the 6 o'clock meeting with Lorne Michaels. And I show up, and the secretary addresses me as Sandy, and I forget to respond. So I almost blow my cover right then and there. And then Lorne walks out and shakes my hand. He says, hello, Sandy. What is this all about? And it better be important. I still remember that. And I'm in shock at this point. And I go into his office, and I start doing my shtick, my impressions, my bits, this, that, and the other. And I can kind of see he's nodding, and I see there's a room full of people. And finally, I hear, oh, it was a good Dan Aykroyd. It was a good Tom Snyder. Dan Aykroyd was in the room.
Yeah.
I think Belushi was in the room. Gene Dumanian, who wound up producing tons of Woody Allen's movies and one ill-fated season of Saturday Night Live. Barbara Burns, all these people. And I finally revealed at the end of my shtick, I'm Andy Cowan. I came up here in a train. I'll do anything. Sweep floors, blah, blah, blah. And so I gave him the video of my shtick that I was doing at the Main Point, a big Philly club, and kept in touch. And Philly did a big report on me, and nothing happened. And they did wind up doing Jane, You Ignorant Slut, which was an offshoot of a bit that I had done in my stand-up at the time, which I chalked up to Parallel Development, but it was a hell of a sign that, boy, I had courage to do anything. And then my other out-of-body SNL experience was a few years later when the trusty VCR was invented, and I came home and watched an episode that I had thankfully taped, and I realized, what the? I know this bit. What is this bit? And I fast-forward to the credits, and my ex-writing partner that I worked with for a very short time stole my bit verbatim. And it was the first incarnation of Mr. Subliminal. Kevin Nealon wound up doing it years later. Oh, remember when he would slip in little subliminal messages and the other person would receive it? And well, this started with Joe Piscopo. And that's when they first introduced that whole bit. And it was verbatim my bit. And so when I ran into the guy at the Merv Griffin Show, the partner, about a year later, I felt like saying, hi, how are you doing? Pay me, you bastard. You know, slipping in subliminally so he would receive this message. But I was too embarrassed for both him and me, so I let it go. But I did refer to it in the book. It's just one of those things.
Okay, let me ask you one thing. I'm going to stop you for one second.
Yeah.
About the SNL thing. What do you mean by Philly reported on you? They did a story on you?
KYW-TV did Andy Cowan, who's a stand-up in Philly, and he took a train, and now he's got to make a big decision. Should he move to L.A. or New York? And that's no joke. And this was about 78 before I did move to L.A. So.
Yeah. And so what does it mean, Parallel Development? I mean, I think I know what it means, but what you're saying is that it wasn't just your idea?
Well, I mean, you figure, okay, sometimes things are in the atmosphere and people pick up on things and ideas happen, and it doesn't mean they ripped you off. It just means there were similar creative bursts of energy that resulted in this particular bit. But I had been doing a bit, I don't know if you remember Jack Kilpatrick and Shayna Alexander on 60 Minutes. Well, Shayna. They preceded Andy Rooney.
Yeah.
And I used to do a bit on that killed in the clubs, and it was in the video. And this Jane, You Ignorant Slut was largely a takeoff on the Jack Kilpatrick thing. It was a different thing. But, you know, you always wonder.
Yeah. Well, because you say, you know, that you got over and you let it go. But obviously you didn't because, you know, it still comes to mind and you wrote about it, you know.
Yeah, I wrote about
it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't brew over it or stew over it, rather.
Right.
I mean, the other thing hurt like hell at the time when you see your verbatim bit.
And you saw that guy, and you, why were you embarrassed for yourself?
I was embarrassed for him, and I just felt uncomfortable
That's so crazy. Why wouldn't you have just said, hey, listen, man.
Yeah.
I saw the bit. And so what do you have to say?
Right.
Just see what he said. In other words, let him.
I was too worried about being a nice guy even then. That is so sick.
Yeah.
I'm less worried about being a nice guy now.
Why do we do that? Because we're people pleasers.
Yeah. I mean, that's part and parcel of some aspect of this business they call show, being a people pleaser.
Yeah, because you want approval.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get that.
Right.
Who didn't give it to you, your mom or dad?
Oh, boy, you're cutting right to the core. Yeah, that's something I've reflected on recently. You know, when your parents pass and you start to shine a light on, what's the let's look back in time and see what led to what. Well, I've also said I can't blame my parents for any withholding of praise because their parents probably withheld praise for them and their parents' parents withheld praise from them. So it goes back to Adam and Eve, Cowan.
I guess I just feel like, because I have a child, I just feel like, you know, at any time you could say the buck stops here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you don't have to hit your kids. Or you don't have to yell at your kids. Mm-hmm. You don't have to, you know what I mean? You don't have to repeat mistakes. You know better.
Right.
You know, but I don't know. I guess you like to also think that they did the best with what they had.
Right.
And like when my dad, you know, his generation, they didn't help with homework. They didn't go to your school. The teachers didn't even ask for their involvement. So anyway, okay, so that's good. Thank you for updating me on the SNL. Tell me something else.
When I was a writer on the Pat Sajak show, he had a late night show, and I developed a send-up of 60 minutes called 6 Minutes. I produced it and played all the parts. Mike Wallace, Morley Safer. It was Mike Cowan, Morley Cowan, all these other people. Put it together in a 6-minute hunk, perfect time length for stand-up. Mm-hmm. Figured it would be perfect for Sajak's show, a CBS show too, nonetheless. And I got turned down, which really stung. And I turned lemons into lemonade, and I cold called Showtime, the movie channel, Bravo, PBS, all of whom bought it as interstitial programming, ran it as a short form thing, and I wound up getting nominated for a Cable Ace Award, and I won a best short form programming special. I still remember the intro. I got a letter back from Don Hewitt, the creator of 60 Minutes, who loved the piece. I still remember the bit. It was exposing supermarket express aisle cheating. So it was few signs and Mike Wallace. Yeah, this was in the heyday. Few signs in recent memory have garnered less respect than the ones we all come upon at supermarket checkout counters with the familiar phrase, 10 items or less. For over a decade now, this so-called restriction has been more and more loosely enforced, and oftentimes entirely ignored. And who's willing to claim responsibility for this legal and moral dilemma? Well, if you think it's the supermarket cashier, think again. So.
Oh my gosh, your accent is spot on. That is so funny.
Yeah, so that was a thrill just to see. So, but of course, my story of my life, I have a defunct award, Cable Ace Award. They got rid of that. And I go to the ceremony. I win. I take a date who I just met. So that's the one reason she... are you coming because of I'm going to this award show? Yeah. I said, all right. At least you're honest.
Yeah.
We go. She screams. She's thrilled. I'm on TV. They're taking shots backstage. She drives me to Nikki Blair's, which was a big showbiz hangout at the time. And she winds up hanging out with some other guy. I'm thinking, wow, I need to have won an Oscar to keep this woman. A Cable Ace wasn't enough.
Oh, that sucks. What do you mean by you cold called Showtime?
Well, I got on the phone and I just sold this sucker on my own. I said, I have this short. Would you be interested in running it as short? Back then, I think it was more commonplace to have interstitial programming.
Yeah, I used to host an interstitial show for 2 years on USA Network.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, called Ready for the Weekend. So it was that idea of like 11 segments and, you know, and then we would show like bad Adam Sandler movies.
Oh, how about that?
You know, I don't know. You know, like a lot of Jim Carrey, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but you know who introduced this in the movie channel when they ran it was Robert Osborne.
I don't think I know him.
He was the guy, he was the voice of AMC. He died a year or two ago. He would introduce all the classic films and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like coming this summer, that kind of stuff.
He would be like he would be on camera doing the ins and outs to classic movies, and he'd be interviewing the classic stars.
Yeah,
yeah.
Good. Okay. Do you have one more story?
Yes.
Good.
Oh yeah. At the Merv Griffin Show, I wound up being assigned Laurence Olivier, which was incredible. And I went to pick him up in a limousine, Sir Laurence Olivier. He was on to promote his new book. And so I pick him up, and I'm nervous and everything. And he says, call me Larry, which was very tough to do. And we went to an apartment to meet a cousin or a nephew or something, because it had Olivier nameplate outside, which I found funny. And we went back to the show with the book, and I was all set. I couldn't wait for him to sign the galleys. And when I go back into the dressing room, hanging around him, sucking up the oxygen, is Merv's cousin, Charlie Hayde. He used to be on Hill Street Blues. He was an actor, Merv's cousin. And so, of course, the actor's actor, and he's surrounded by Laurence Olivier. And he grabs my book, he gives it to him, says, sign it to Merv. So I'm crushed. He signs it to Merv. He goes and does his thing. And then he comes back. And I kind of explain to him what happened. And he says, ooh, I'm a good cheater. And he takes the book and he turns Merv into Andrew. I show it in the book, a seamless Andrew. And so I have these galleys, which was so, I mean, it's incredible coming from him. And then,
but
of course,
a galley is a book before it gets published.
Yeah, yeah. And little did I, a few years later, I interviewed Jimmy Carter. He signed a book to me too. But then he was on again with yet another book. The guy keeps writing books left and right. And Merv was saying, we'll be right back. And Merv throws to a commercial and he opens up the book and it's already signed to this other talent coordinator who had interviewed Carter. And he sees it signed to him and he goes backstage and he was livid. I'd never seen him so mad. He was really mad at the talent coordinator. I guess he wanted the book signed to him. I hadn't even realized. I hadn't thought about that with Olivier. So the talent coordinator quit. It was drama. Yeah. And I used to, and I thought, you know, if he had found out about the Olivier thing, my name would have been Merv/Andrew/Mud. He would have been annoyed.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding. And you will be in Los Angeles forever.
Boy, every day I think, okay, that's it. I've had it. It's like, you know what? When I first came out here, I fooled myself. I couldn't tell myself, okay, I'm about to move here forever. I told myself it was a 6-week experiment in 78. So here I am in 2019, and every week I'm still thinking, all right, I'll hang on. I'll stick it out a little longer. I obviously can't commit.
But everybody I know that left regrets it.
That's what I hear.
Yeah, because they think that, you know, that it's more than just geography. It's, you know, in a way, it's like, you know, dampening your spirit or, you know, tampering down what your heart wants.
Oh, I know. I know. In fact, I had a frightening little preview of that a few weeks ago when a friend of mine who lives in Florida, he's kind of retired. He's older than me. He said, come on down here. The real estate's great. You can get a place for such and such. And he's talking about the beach and you rent a chair. And I've never been a beach person. And I started to really think about the notion of just retiring and just, I've never been good with free time that way. And it horrified me. It to me, it's like a slow death.
Yeah. I feel that way sometimes when I go back east to visit family and stuff. It's all so vast. I don't know. I get nervous when it's so quiet and I don't see people.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm such a city person.
Well, good for you. I mean, I am too reclusive in my building in Santa Monica. I never see people. So that's a problem. I need to see more people. But
that seems hard to believe. Santa Monica's so bustling.
I know. There are areas that are bustling, but where I live is not bustling. It's just, I hear hammering everywhere. Everybody's hammering and literally 3 years of hammering going on somewhere. You remember that? Remember Annie Hall when Woody Allen was going there? What is that noise? What is that noise? There's always a noise every
day.
That's
hilarious. Hey, listen, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been really fun.
Oh, thank you for having me.
True Hollywood Tales with Andy Cowan. Thank you, really.
And congratulations on your 9th anniversary.
Man,
many
thank
more.
You. I appreciate it, really. And I want to thank all the sponsors on the show today. Really, you guys, when you support my sponsors like Third Love Bras, then you are supporting me and my child. And I thank you so much. All right, you guys, I do have to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Tweet Andy Cowan, at Andy G. Cowan, and then also head over to his website, andycowan.net, because there you will find all sorts of things Andy Cowan, including his cartoons and all the stuff he's been writing, and it's a very busy site. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Andy Cowan, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Super fun.
Thank you.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.